They've worked on the environment piece. Now, why should they avoid a generic mold protocol?
We still have to work on those foundations first. So you're peeing, pooping, sweating, exhaling. A lot of us are holding our breath, and actually mold does affect the upper respiratory system. As an adaptation, we tend to shallow breathe versus deep breathing.
I've literally had clients see improvement in symptoms just with circadian rhythm, just with working on nutrition. I love food-based binders and incorporating those for super sensitive people. I love chia seeds, pumpkin seeds, raw carrots.
The adrenals are completely overworked in mold illness. Low sodium is pretty common in that adrenal fatigue picture. And then also potassium tends to drop with it.
Salt also helps stimulate bile. Lemon, that can also help stimulate bile. It doesn't have to always be like, let's jump to a supplement in order to handle the mold stuff. Welcome to the Hormone Healing RD podcast. We will get clear, practical guidance for your healing journey. I'm Amanda Montalvo, women's health dietitian and mineral expert. I have helped thousands of women and I've gone through my own healing journey, and I know how overwhelming the wellness world can be. This show really aims to cut through the noise with simple research and clinical backed insights on hormones, minerals, and what your body truly needs to heal. And we are with part two with Gracie, our mold expert at Hormone Healing RD. And we are going to be getting into how you can support your body. You know, what do we want to avoid when we're thinking of more of physically supporting our body? Last time we went through your environment, what mold is, where it can grow, how to minimize that, remediation tips, things like that. So definitely listen to that episode if you have not already, since the main takeaway that we gave with that episode is that we don't want to try to treat mold, do any sort of mold detoxification, really any like antimicrobials or detox support or anything, if you're currently living in molds. You have to first remove yourself from the environment or fix whatever that environment is to remove that mold. So today we're going to talk about why generic mold protocols don't work, how most people jump to advanced most mold protocols without the foundation and what happens. And we're going to dig into mast cell activation syndrome and just how to work on your foundations before you get into anything else. Because while it's not sexy and a lot of people want to skip it because they're like, I'm so ill, I feel so terrible. I know why people want to skip it. I get it. But it's really the only way you're going to find relief. So thank you so much for being here again, Gracie.
Absolutely.
So let's get into when should someone consider investigating if mold is an issue for them?
Yeah, if you suspect you have a history of exposure or an active exposure. So if you lived or worked in a water damaged building, visible mold present that you see, if you've experienced a musty smell in the home or workplace, it's not always there, but if it is, that's active mold. Recent water intrusions, flooding, leaks. If there's a building that has a history of moisture issues, that's a huge red flag as well. And those are usually followed up with other symptoms that like multiple chemical sensitivities, food sensitivities, brain fog, memory issues, chronic fatigue, joint or muscle pain, recurrent infections. So that immune suppression is kicking in, MCAS symptoms, dysautonomia symptoms, and just unexplained multi-systems is what I usually say, not just one of those.
Yeah, it's never, so it's like a whole host of things. Yeah. So if someone, they've worked on the environment piece, right? So now, why should they avoid a generic mold protocol? Why should they not just, they remediated their home or got rid of, moved to a different environment? That next step, how come we don't recommend go buy that mold detox kit?
Yeah, we're skipping super important steps. So we've already remediated the mold. Now we're looking at foundation. So typically, circadian rhythm support is not in place. That sleep-wake body temperature, hormone-producing digestion and metabolism support isn't there sometimes. Nervous system support is also sometimes lacking. A lot of our clients are going to lack that physiological buffer to how to handle these toxins that are being mobilized. So mold toxicity damages these systems. And so it's super important to work on them prior to working on a big protocol. How we excrete our waste is another big thing. How you're peeing, pooping, sweating, exhaling. A lot of us are holding our breath, and actually mold, as an adaptation, we tend to shallow breathe versus deep breathing. That's like an adaption that we see in mold because it does affect the upper respiratory system. And so mucus production and menstruation are all part of that excreting waste. And so those need to gradually be in place or worked on at least prior to our body dumping these huge mycotoxins into our lymphs and our detoxification processes, because it'll overwhelm both systems. So not having those foundations in place, circadian rhythm, nervous support, how we're excreting our waste. And then a lot of people, if you see a lot of the binder, a lot of the protocols out there, they work first on binders. And that can also be hurtful. You know, they don't just bind up mycotoxins. They also bind up important nutrients that we need in the detoxification process. And so we love to talk about liver and bile here and how that helps us carry out these toxins from our body out of the system. And typically binders will mobilize these toxins quicker or to where our body's not able to handle it. And essentially we start to recirculate them because we're not able to get rid of them properly. The reason being that sometimes clients are constipated, so binders make it worse. And they're not, once again, the elimination pathways are not in place.
Yeah, it's too much. It's like too much. Because it's like, think about it. You're going from being incredibly symptomatic. There's always a fatigue. I've never not had fatigue as like a component for like a mold client. Usually it's, and if you do a hair test on them, what do you typically see? Bottomed out minerals, just fast four. So they've been, that means their body's still stressed, but it doesn't have the resources to back it up. Adrenals are exhausted, thyroid's exhausted. Low mineral resources, which minerals are very important for mold. The bonus episode that I'm doing with this episode is all on minerals and mold. So because think about it, minerals help us detox. They help support bile, digestive juices, the liver, the whole detoxification process, our immune system. Like it's a huge, huge component. But even then you can't start at minerals because even supporting your minerals will be very stimulating of detoxification. It's like you got to have the foundations in place of that circadian rhythm, like you talked about, nervous system support and those like elimination pathways. It's like, that's always number one. And I just find like people, like I try to take a binder and it stirs up just so much more stress in their body.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the histamine storm that's basically going to occur as we go through, especially because we see a lot of MCOS people, POTS, hypermobility, all that kind of stuff with that mold history, and why they are typically the worst candidate for a generic mold protocol.
We know that mold and mycotoxins are going to activate those mast cells. And so the immune system releases this histamine and the inflammatory mediators, and we have to calm that down first. We have to calm it down first before you start a big mold protocol or stabilizing. When you stabilize your response, then you're able to handle these protocols and reduce your likelihood of being super sensitive to the protocols that we're putting you on, or any support nutrients that we're putting you on. And you're better able to handle die-off later on as well. So if we calm the system down first, then we can really lead to help the body get to that rest and repair state. Because initially we're in that fight or flight state and we're just not responding. We're not going to be able to respond, and we're not going to be able to calm the storm down essentially.
Yeah. And then that's what creates more symptoms. You're just more symptomatic. Because I think that's like the hard part for people to grasp, is that I'll have people be like, should I just push through? I feel awful, but should I? And we've had clients ask this if they have a reaction to something, like, I can just push through it. Should just let me know. So what is your answer to that?
Don't push through. No, we typically, I mean, I think we're the same. We believe the same things. And we just scale back and give your body some time to catch up. It's okay for it to take longer than we originally thought to support the mold histamine piece. It's definitely okay to scale back and listen to your body. If we're skipping that message, then the body can also get used to hearing being shushed, you know? We don't want to do that. That's definitely, we need to be mindful of what our body is telling us and scale back significantly if that's what it means, that's what it takes.
And what are some of your favorite tools if for like preparing someone, like they've worked on the foundations, you know, right? They're eating enough, they're getting their light. and they're working on their nervous system. That's a process, right? That takes time, but they're working on it. What are some of the things that you like to tools you like to use to calm that immune system reaction before you implement some of the like actual like mold detox tools?
Yeah, I love quercetin is huge. I mean, I think that's one of my number ones that I go to. Nettles is huge. I'm trying to think of a few others that are super. We've used Perilla in client care as well.
You like homeopathy too. I feel like you always know whenever I'm like, Gracie, what could I use for this?
There's a few different blends depending on like what you're trying to support. Kidneys are always affected. And you helped me out as well with where the kidney blends. But there's a company that I love to use, and they have a lot of support for liver, kidney. They have a lot of even mold blends that can be super helpful. So homeopathy is a big one too. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it's a great one too for people that are really sensitive because they tend to not react to it. So it's I love using a mix. Like typically you're always going to use like a mix, but. And then for like some of the people that have like their symptoms are like more severe and they've been dealing with this. It's not just like one mold exposure that triggered this, but it's like they've been on this journey for a while. I'll use Pepcid, Zyrtec, stronger over the counter, like antihistamines. It's some people don't want to do that. And I totally respect that. But sometimes like you got to use the heavy hitters to get the histamines down at the beginning.
Totally forgot about those. Yeah, those are our favorites, really.
I feel like you do more like herbal stuff. Like I'm always like, I love how gentle your approach is, you know, but it's still effective. And I think that's something for people can look out for if you are working with a practitioner. You know, what's the order of operations in, or if you're interviewing practitioners? Because I will say, it's like it always makes me sad when people have seen like 4 to 5 practitioners before they come to us. I'm like, I wish you found us first. Cause it's like, they're like, usually on the application, the statement that I'll read is we ask what they've done before and like, did it help? And they're all for the moldies. I love you that you call our moldies. For our sweet moldies that really need our care and support, that application answer is always that they've tried XYZ. They worked with however many different providers, and they typically say I could not tolerate anything that they recommended. And so that's their main concern is like, are you going to tell me to take stuff that I can't tolerate? And I'm like, we are going to help you find what you can tolerate and make sure that if someone's going straight for a detox protocol, it's like, it's so important to ask those questions. It's like, what's your approach? And no one can tell you. If someone can tell you exactly what they're going to have someone take, it's like, that's not a good sign because it should be customized to you, you know?
Yeah, we do use a variety of homeopathy, a variety of supplement blends. I don't stick to just one. As a matter of fact, if I had providers who just stuck to one, company, that was a red flag for me too.
Oh yeah. Huge red flag. Yeah. And I get it. Sometimes it's easier for the client if you're just getting everything from one company, but can't sacrifice how effective something is or like the approach, you know, for just making it more convenient because it usually like won't work. So I think that's like an important consideration. If you're like, okay, I've had this mold exposure, I'm on these next steps, you work on your foundation. And I've literally had clients see improvement in symptoms just with circadian rhythm, just with working on nutrition. Or a good one that we didn't talk about is we talked about binders and how like generic mold protocols, those binders can stir stuff up, right? Because they're not just binding and removing. They're triggering a detox reaction in the body. I love food-based binders and incorporating those for super sensitive people. And I know you do that as well. And it's like, that's another thing people could consider in the beginning, if you tolerate it, depending on your digestion. But I love like chia seeds, pumpkin seeds, just raw carrots, like getting those beans, like those good fibers in and how that binds to that bile and gets it out of the gut. Because a lot of times your people are recirculating that.
Absolutely. Insoluble fiber is huge. There's a lot of really good research. And that's actually where I start is food, you know, insoluble fiber from food. In an order of like least constipating to most constipating, I have found that like flax, chia, rice, oats, and then psyllium husks. We love psyllium husks.
Yeah, psyllium husk. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one. Yeah.
Okra, kale, aloe, they all work as gentle binders. And steamed is is where the research is too, like versus raw. But steamed okra, kale, aloe, I think even ground up okra, finely ground up okra has been super effective as a binder.
Yeah. So it's like, it doesn't have to always be like, let's jump to a supplement in order to handle like the mold stuff. And so if we were going to, so say like you get through that order of operations, you're working on the food binders, I would still wouldn't add those in right away. I would focus on like the foundational stuff first. Then you can consider maybe experimenting with some food-based binders and also hydration. I mean, I feel like we could talk about that all day.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a huge one. If you're not hydrated, that's going to affect your detox pathways, your digestion, like so many aspects.
Yeah. You mentioned there are always a four lows fast four. Absolutely. You need to start there first.
Yeah. And that's where like those basic, you know, sodium, potassium can be very helpful. What are some of your favorite ways to have people start hydrating if that's like something that they're not already doing?
Well, the adrenal cocktail recipes are amazing, but starting simple, because once again, they're sensitive. So a lot of our clients probably don't want to do an instant hydration or they don't want to buy a blend of electrolytes to start with or minerals to start with. So single ingredient, coconut water, a dash of salt in the morning, a pinch of salt in the tongue. Soleil water is huge. Aloe is a wonderful binder, but also very soothing. And it has that mucin property that also tends to feed the good bacteria, Acclimatia mucinophila. So aloe is also potassium rich. Tea, dandelion root tea is huge. It's also potassium sparing. I think you spoke in town about that in your course. And yes, it's fantastic. It's also bitter. And so there's like a lot of these potassium rich nutrients tend to have multiple things that they help you with. So single ingredient is huge, and keeping it super simple so that you can avoid sensitive reactions or just feeling worse. So just keep it simple.
Yeah. And I love, like, especially if I have someone that we're really trying to work on bile, maybe they're constipated. I see that a lot with mold, or just like constipated loose stools, like the alternating. It's like sea salt in your water, or just like a little bit under your tongue, drink some water in the morning. Salt also helps stimulate bile, or warm lemon water. Lemon, that can also help stimulate bile. And they're very gentle, and they're things that most people aren't going to have a reaction to. So again, it's like those simple things, they seem small, but like dandelion tea, I mean, it's so simple, but it not only helps support your minerals, but it's also going to help support your liver and help with digestive juice production, which helps for detoxification. So those little things, they're very, very helpful. And I find that they make any supplements you take much more effective.
Absolutely. Another thing too that I really loved during my mold healing about dandelion was I couldn't tolerate coffee at all. Like there was no way. One, I was probably drinking moldy coffee, but I was probably like super depleted and I could not eat coffee. So I held off on it. And dandelion root, roasted dandelion tea was my favorite because it tastes earthy. You know, it's quite earthy. And so that was a huge replacement for me during that time.
Yeah. And people like chicory root too. And that technically could be a good fiber as well. If you're looking for a coffee replacement, that's also going to give you some other benefits. And then from there, it's really getting specific to the person and what else they have going on. So we're using all these like foundational things, food-based binders, hydration, basics with mineral support, you know, that I'm always kind of talking about, circadian rhythm, all that stuff. And then we do hair testing and stool testing with all of our clients. Let's talk about mold testing, because that's probably one of the, I get a lot of inquiries on like, should I test for mold? If say we have a client that is struggling with, they know they have the exposure, we're dealing with the mold issues. They're like, well, how come we're going to do a hair test and a stool test versus doing a mold test? What would you say to that?
Well, if a person is, they're known to be exposed to mold and we know they have it, we still have to work on those foundations first, and the hair test gives us all that information that we need to get started. A stool test can be super helpful also to see like, how deeply are we? How are those normal keystone commensals doing? Most of the time, well, I've seen both things. I've seen low commensals and I've seen like major overgrowth. Yeah. You know, we also get that secretory IgA marker, which is super important, and a liver marker, beta-pyglucuronidase, which is super important. And so looking at those two, working on the gut, repairing, supporting our minerals, nervous system, so, you know, circadian rhythm, and having those foundations in place, and then going forward and working on your gut you're doing that gently as you're moving along, but then working through your gut sets you up for even better success when you want to go through a mold protocol. So mold testing, to me, sometimes can be necessary. It depends on the person. I think if we have a real maybe sickly person, that might be beneficial to kind of, they're not sure where they were exposed from mold, but we know that they have mold-like symptoms. So sometimes it can help us figure out which botanicals would be best for that particular person. But there are four companies that I've used three. Mosaic, which used to be Great Plains. I've used Mosaic a ton, and I've used Vibrant Wellness, Vibrant America a little bit. And then the My Michael Lab is one that I recently started using. And then I think the other one was Real Time. The fourth one was Real Time. That's a pretty, I haven't either, but I know that that one is used in the mold community. I just haven't used it. But the first three have been really effective. I have seen, like, for instance, in the Mosaic, where the organic acid test, where you see the mold presentation there, but you don't know exactly which mycotoxins you're dealing with exactly. So that's where the actual mycotoxin test is helpful. And then I've also seen where that's positive and then the stool test is negative, like the candida piece is negative. I have seen that, and I've also seen it present. So it just depends on what we're dealing with. So if a person is like, if we feel we need to get more information or more data on like what exactly we're dealing with, or maybe we're not seeing any results of what we're already doing with the protocols that we're doing already, then we can move forward and do some mold specific testing if that's going to be helpful.
Our monthly cycle is like a report card. Understanding how to track your cycle and know what is and is not normal as far as your symptoms can go can help you identify possible hormone imbalances and whether or not maybe you're making nutrition, lifestyle, or supplement changes. It'll just give you an idea if those are working for you or not. And this is why I created my free Healthy Period Starter Guide. It walks you through all the different phases of your cycle, how to track, teaches you what's at the root of different hormone imbalances, and even has a section for nutrition tips for healthy hormones. I think every woman should have this knowledge easily accessible to them, which is why I made it. You can grab the guide via the link in the show notes, or you can go to my website, hormonehealingrd.com, and you can find it under the guides and support section.
And I think there's so many things you want to consider with mold testing. Number one, if you have mold symptoms, for anyone, you can release a different mold's amounts and types like each day. What you eat is going to affect your mold test, and how well you're detoxing things. Because I have seen clients that obviously have mold. They have the mold exposure. They've got all the symptoms. And then their mold test comes back not that bad. Very, you know, underwhelming compared to what we're thinking. And it's because their body's not eliminating well, which is why they're so symptomatic. So I started to test the person in the home that was not symptomatic. And then I could see what mold is actually, because they're getting rid of it. You know, it's usually the husband or the kid. And if there is one in the home, and I found that it's like, if we'd have both of them do the test, and then it's like the person that didn't have symptoms, their test was completely different.
Yeah. I've had clients the same thing, do elimination diets, or like mold, like take out moldy foods and have a ton of mold present. And I've had them take it out and not have a ton of mold present. Like I've seen so many different things. It's really tricky. But you're right, when we're trying to decide on what test would be appropriate, and I'm still learning a little bit more about this, but looking at your immune function, looking at your kidneys, your immune threshold, and looking at your ability to detox in general, those all impact which test I would probably go with. I'm starting to learn a little bit more about that, but that's something else you can pay attention to. But yeah, if the person's detoxing well, that might give you more clues to like what you're actually dealing with.
I just was getting so frustrated. I'm like, I'm not getting the information that I need to. And I'm like, it's just so finicky. I still don't think they're like they can't be the only thing you look at, basically, you know, but could they possibly be helpful for types of binders? Maybe, but I will say with my most sensitive clients, sometimes it just doesn't matter because I can't use that kind of binder with them. So I'm very much like a, let's do the foundations. I include hair mineral testing in that for sure. And then looking deeper at the gut so we can get that immune information. What is their steatocrit? Like, do they have a ton of fat in their stool? Should we really be honing in on bile even more? Like, I feel like you get all the other pieces from those tests. And then again, if you need to take a deeper look at mold, then you could consider mold testing. It's just, I get that question a lot of like,
what mold test should. I'm like, well, if you haven't done anything else, then you probably shouldn't do mold testing. And then sometimes it's even more effective to do it once we've already been working on those foundations, because then they're eliminating it and then we can see it come up on their test. Yeah. And you had mentioned moldy food, and I know someone's going to ask what those are. which foods are going to be higher in mold?
Yeah. So I think as far as like also being cautious of like B vitamins, yeast flakes, medicinal mushrooms are also moldy. I got sick around that time where kombucha was a big thing. I was doing a ton of kombucha and that was just awful. I had so much brain fog. It wasn't even funny. Saccharomyces boulardii can be moldy. It's a fungal. It's a fungal probiotic. And so, yeah, cheeses, certain beverages like kombuchas, coffee, grains can be moldy. The list can be quite long, and there I have two tiers that I typically will work through with the client if we decide to do. It's rare that we do see a lot of sickly clients, a lot of moldies, but there's two tiers that I tend to focus on and like how much we're going to actually move. And for instance, like the second tier would be like carbs and working, minimizing a little bit of the carbs. But yeah, a lot of those foods tend to wreak havoc and make symptoms worse sometimes. And it just depends on the person, literally.
I wonder supplements in general, like I have never really looked into this, but I feel like supplements in general could probably be a pretty big exposure.
Yeah, yeah. I know for me, I couldn't tolerate Saccharomyces boulardii at all. And I couldn't tolerate a B complex. So I didn't understand why back then. No one could really tell me why. But yeah, those are brought on moldy mediums, and S. boulardii, like I mentioned, is a fungal probiotic strain that is beneficial most of the time, and it also helps boost your immune system when you're in the right place. But I think for me and for some of my clients, I think of mold or fungal overload as a histamine bucket. You know, I use that same analysis. If your fungal bucket is full, then that probiotic might just set you off, or that B vitamin might just set you off. I remember yeast flakes. I remember reading seasonings like no other thing. Like I would read a seasoning and panic because there was yeast flakes in there and it would make my skin reactions worse. And so it was just that my fungal bucket was full and overflowing. But yeah, those antibiotics are also made through mold. Some of them, not all of them. Yeast flakes, bees, S. boulardii, medicinal mushrooms. B. propolis.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people realize that. And it's like you said, like it's like histamine issues. If you can remove high histamine foods and still not get relief from your symptoms, you could probably remove moldy foods and not notice a difference in your symptoms. It's not the root. It's not like you have to follow that diet forever. It's just like you could do those things to reduce your load a little bit. Obviously, the environment may be the biggest one when it comes to mold. But yeah, I was like, I know people are going to ask about those, so I have to ask you. And then before we wrap up, let's just go through what are the major nutrients that are depleted when it comes to mold in the body. And then we'll leave it there. And then if people want more information on minerals and stuff, then I'll dig into like all of that in the bonus episode.
So the four lows, first four, calcium, magnesium, sodium, potassium. Magnesium, we use that up in detox. We use it up in our stress response. So mold exposure and inflammation can drive that loss. Calcium, I see that often dysregulated, rather low especially in HTMA, but mold induces acidity and inflammation and it disturbs the calcium magnesium balance. Sodium and potassium, the adrenals are completely overworked in mold illness. And so low sodium is pretty common in that adrenal fatigue picture. And then also potassium tends to drop with it. Zinc, sometimes I may see it higher on the HTMA test and they're just burning through it really quickly. Or sometimes I'll see it low on the HTMA, but zinc is huge. We need that for tissue repair, immune balance, glutathione production. Selenium is another common one that we also may see, we may see it high or low, where it's crucial for glutathione peroxidase and thyroid protection. So it is depleted during oxidative stress and when we're exposed to mold toxins. Manganese, required for superoxide dismutase and mitochondrial defense. And it's often low with this chronic exposure to mold or mycotoxins. And then molybdenum, which is my favorite. It's critical for metabolizing aldehydes and sulfur compounds from all of our mycotoxins. And so we use that up quite quickly, especially when candida is an issue. And sometimes I tend to see, well, finishing up through the hair test, copper imbalances. Mold can dysregulate copper a ton.
And it's antifungal. So that's dysregulated. It's just another thing that your mold bucket's going to get overflowed.
Absolutely. And then sulfur compounds. So sulfur used in glutathione production and detox pathways, especially at phase two conjugation. So mold can impair that sulfur metabolism. And that's where I also remember sulfur being an issue for me too on the later phases. And so people tend to be sensitive to sulfur foods or supplements and like N-acetylcysteine or your cruciferous vegetables. And iron, I tend to see iron. Mycotoxins can block iron utilization. And so sometimes in the blood work, it may show up as a deficiency or it may be imbalanced in the HTMA when we do go look at all the markers for iron. And glutathione is like gain number one. It's our master antioxidant, super helpful. And we burn through that one really quickly when we're exposed to mycotoxins. And sometimes we can't tolerate N-acetylcysteine, which is a precursor to glutathione. So we look at other things like glycine and vitamin C to help retain it.
I love glycine too, because it's so good for your gut. And I don't know anyone with mold issues that doesn't always also need like that gut support too.
Oh yeah. I love glycine even to this day.
I know. It's a very calming and it's like, it's safe during pregnancy. Yeah. Yeah. Glycine is safe.
It's super safe. Yeah.
Yeah. Except the passion flower I was thinking of is not safe, but because I like to put the glycine and passion flower together. It's like, if you want to chill, that'll make you chill. But yeah, it's like one of my like more top, and like people usually tolerate it even if they're super sensitive.
Oh yeah. Glycine is one of my number ones. I don't think I've had a sensitivity to it, and it's really nice and convenient. You can get it in a powder form and it doesn't taste bad. So super easy. It
prepares your gut, good for methylation, you know, it does all the things. And then what about vitamins? Because I know that's something that I feel like that often gets a, like, if when I see someone, like they go see like a functional doctor or naturopath, they're like put on like super high doses of like B vitamins, vitamin C, D, you know, and then they're like, I feel awful.
I know. We have a very gentle approach. If anything, we'll add maybe B6 initially if we go in the need for that detoxification and adrenal support. I usually see B6, B5, B12 folate super low. And sometimes you can see that in the cobalt, in the HTMA. You can see that wasting away. But B12 and folate they're often impaired because you have a lot of gut inflammation. So we're not absorbing these and we're not able to utilize them in our detoxification process like we were supposed to. But a lot of our Bs, B1, B2, B3, B5, B6, folate and B12, all of them tend to be used up quite a bit. But with B6 and B12 and folate being the stars there as far as like where we see them. Vitamin C, antioxidant defense, tissue repair, we constantly see that one. And that one's also one that we see as far as like glutathione production. So vitamin C, if it's needed, it's very common. And then vitamin D, I think that one is, you know, twofold, that chronic inflammation. I don't think it's that we're not absorbing it at all. I think, you know, at my second exposure, the only thing that was really weird for me with mold was that my vitamin D was like a 9. I've never seen a vitamin D that low.
Yeah, I have. I've seen the 25OH. Yeah.
Yeah, it was super low. And I think I was thinking like 2000, I used a vitamin D back then. I don't do that now, but I think it was just more inflammation versus like you're not able to absorb it.
I look at it as like this is a symptom, especially because it's always the people that are taking it or they get a ton of sun. They're like, no, I spend a lot of time very much outside. And that's when I'm like, okay, this is like a symptom of inflammation. It's not like the cause of inflammation.
Absolutely. So mine is super low. I see it low a lot. It's just inflammation related. So taking 10,000 IUs or 50,000 IUs weekly is not going to help. So vitamin A and E is the other two. They're fat-soluble antioxidants that protect us from mold toxicity.
And they're so important for your immune. Like, I just think vitamin A, and so many people are deficient in it and they don't realize. And then, like you mentioned, low iron and like high copper or dysregulated copper, it's usually there's like a vitamin A component there. So that's why it's like so much that we do with the hair test makes such a big difference with mold, but it's definitely not just that. Mold, I think, needs a very specific approach. Like we've gone through, we don't recommend generic protocols. Get yourself out of the mold first and like work on the simple things, the foundations, the circadian rhythm, the nervous system support. Work on your just like eliminating properly. Are you breathing deeply? Are you taking really shallow breaths? Like paying attention to all those things and then considering, okay, maybe I'm going to add in some of those like food-based supports. Even you could do all this before you even see a practitioner and start to see results.
Absolutely. Taking it easy, taking it super slow, listen to your body, don't push through.
Yeah, don't push through. Major takeaway from the episode. It's not supposed, especially like if you're in a more sensitive body because of the mold exposure, it's like you, it's not, that's your body communicating with you. So I hope that this episode is helpful for everyone and you've enjoyed our little mold series. Thank you so much, Gracie, for sharing your time and expertise with us. And yeah, if you want more information on this, I'm going to do a little HGMA review of a mold client so you guys can kind of see that in action. Inside Patreon is a bonus episode. And then I have from the previous episode, all the different things that we went through, the notes, the resources, things you want to consider if you think there is mold in your environment. So hopefully this keeps everyone out of the Facebook groups, off the Reddit threads, and gives you a stable place to start from. Because I think that's one of the hardest parts with mold is that it then induces this fear and panic and anxiety, and you're already having a hard time dealing with stress. So I'm hoping this is a good resource for everyone. All right. Thanks, guys. I will see you in the next episode.